DW Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program this Thursday, the 28th of November. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Assumpta Latus. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to engage on the stories that we'll be covering.
That's right, indeed. Coming up on the program, Uganda denies supplying weapons to South Sudan that is under an arms embargo by the United Nations and the European Union.
We don't have any power of doing that as Uganda, to supply equipment to other countries in that kind of manner.
And a Cameroonian activist and human rights lawyer, Agbo Nkongo, has been telling DW why the conflict in Anglophone regions has been raging on and there's no sign that it will end anytime soon.
This has been a 57 years period of marginalization, and the lawyers started it, the teachers joined, but it was a reflection of the bitterness, the frustration, the oppression and the suppressions of the Anglophones by the Francophone.
Also on the program, Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel calls for calm in the standoff between Russia and Ukraine.
There are some of the stories that we have lined up for you.
But first, here's a chance to listen to other stories making headlines around the world.
DW News.
I'm Eunice Wanjiro with DW News. Russia and Ukraine have been at loggerheads since a naval clash off the Crimean coast at the weekend. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko has announced he will impose restrictions on Russian citizens in Ukraine amid fears of a possible invasion. Speaking at a German-Ukrainian business forum on Thursday, German Chancellor Angela Merkel called for a diplomatic solution to the Ukraine conflict after President Poroshenko asked for NATO naval support in his country's standoff with Russia.
Despite the current situation, we ask Ukraine to be smart, because we can only resolve this in talks with one another, and because there is no military solution to all of these conflicts. This needs to be said.
Despite long-standing restrictions, new weapons have continued to reach South Sudan's battlefields, a detailed report by an arms monitoring group said on Thursday. The report by the London-based Conflict Armament Research Organization raises questions about Uganda's support for neighboring South Sudan's government, even as it promotes itself as a neutral negotiator in one of Africa's deadliest conflicts. Thousands of Zimbabweans gathered on Thursday for a nationwide protest over the country's economic collapse and what the opposition calls the new government's cocktail of lies. President Emmerson Mnangagwa's administration is under growing pressure 1 year after taking office. Main opposition leader Nelson Chamisa, echoing some of other speakers, said life in Zimbabwe is more difficult now than it was under Mugabe, former president. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari and Niger's Mahamadou Issoufou are in the Chadian capital, N'Djamena, for closed-door talks with Chadian President Idriss Deby and Cameroon's Prime Minister Philemon Yang to discuss the recent escalation of attacks by Boko Haram jihadists in the Lake Chad area. A Chadian diplomatic source said that the meeting was focused on the security situation in Lake Chad, a strategic area where the borders of four countries converge and where there has been a worrying resurgence of attacks in recent months. German authorities raided several Deutsche Bank offices in the Frankfurt area on Thursday on suspicions of money laundering based on revelations from the 2016 Panama Papers data leak. Frankfurt prosecutor's spokeswoman Nadia Neeson said the investigation was focused on two Deutsche Bank employees aged 50 and 46 and possibly other not yet identified suspects.
The charge is money laundering. The investigation has been running since August 2018, after the federal police assessed data from the Panama Papers and offshore leaks. The suspicion arose that Deutsche Bank helped clients set up offshore companies in so-called tax havens.
In sogenannten Steueroasen offshore Gesellschaften zu gründen.
And finally, Canada said it would impose sanctions against 17 Saudi nationals linked to the killing of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi in Istanbul last month. The sanctions, which will freeze assets and bar travel to Canada, target individuals who are, in the opinion of the government of Canada, responsible for or complicit in the extrajudicial killing of the journalist, a statement by the Foreign Ministry said. And for more news and information, visit our website, dw.com. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Assumpta Latos. And I would like to thank you for joining us also for those who are joining us on via Facebook today. I see Monu Irenius, you saying hello, and I'm saying hello back. And Jiman Jimmy, you're saying, what exactly is the topic today? We have just told you, but we will tell you again later. And we are having also Sitana Hassan, you're saying that you were watching from South Sudan. Many thanks.
Exactly. And on that note, we begin the program today in South Sudan, where despite long-standing restrictions, new weapons have continued to reach South Sudan's battlefields, often via neighboring countries. A detailed report by Anam's Mountain Group said Thursday.
A four-year investigation by London-based conflict armament research CAR into the supply of weapons that have helped keep South Sudan's civil war alive since December 2013 has revealed the important role played by neighboring countries, particularly Uganda, in circumventing arms embargoes. From Kampala, Alex Jita filed this report.
Uganda has denied reports that it sent arms to South Sudan at the time when the South Sudan was under an arms embargo. The conflict armament research based in Britain says there is a paper trail that Uganda got weapons from Europe, and the same weapons ended up in South Sudan in 2014 and 2015. Uganda's Deputy Minister for Defense, retired Colonel Charles Okello Engola, told DW in a brief statement that Uganda government would never undermine an international embargo.
I have nothing to do with a country procuring equipment from other countries and passing into our country. Whatever military equipment which comes to our country, we shall stop it and we should quell it. If somebody brings it without our knowledge, then that's what is what we, you know, and the borders are for us. But Uganda doesn't do that. We don't have any powers of doing that as Uganda to supply equipment to other countries in that kind of manner.
Engola is the only government official who was willing to give a comment on the matter. The army leadership declined to make any statement related to the issue. The CAR report accuses Uganda of assuring the manufacturers in Romania, Bulgaria and Slovakia that the arms were meant for Uganda, but the same arms were then transferred to South Sudan. Regional security expert David Prukol believes the report can be trusted. However, he says that there is a possibility that this arms trade was a private arrangement by individuals embedded in the government of Uganda. He says the government of Uganda should be put under pressure to identify these people.
It's a bit unfortunate that we get mentioned as a country when actually it could be an action of a few individuals within Uganda, not the government, not the whole people of Uganda, who do this kind of thing, flouting international laws and rules. Maybe this is about the criminal elements, the corruption extending itself across borders and therefore dealing with the merchants of war, those who make money out of war situation. So I wish this could be tracked down to who in our military or in our establishment or in our private sector was responsible for this.
Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni has been deeply involved in the South Sudan peace negotiations that saw Vice President Riek Machar return from exile. It is also no secret that Uganda supported rebels of the Sudanese People's Liberation Army, led by John Garang, in their pursuit to break away from Sudan.
That was Alex Jita reporting from Kampala.
And we have some comments here. Richie Silvo says he wonders who's manufacturing those weapons. I mean, the weapons that are going to South Sudan.
Right. And John Hill is saying it is very important, thing that Africans should understand that once war or crisis is called, business of selling arms.
Edwin Ngang says the economy of the West depends largely on the manufacturing and sales of weapons and other war hardwares. Many thanks to those comments. Now, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has called for a diplomatic solution to the standoff between Russia and Ukraine. The two countries have been at loggerheads since a naval clash off the Crimean coast at the weekend.
Ukraine's President Poroshenko has called on NATO to intervene, but the alliance says it already has a strong presence in the region. Poroshenko has announced he will impose restrictions on Russian citizens in Ukraine amid fears of possible invasion.
And for more on this report, here is Joel Rudroy.
Putting on a show of readiness, Ukrainian troops dig trenches near the Russian border. They've been put on alert as martial law comes into effect. Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko visited a military training center, urging his troops to get prepared for action.
We'll give them no chance to invade into Ukraine. That's why today we are doing everything possible to provide extra financing of the armed forces.
Not to be outdone, Russia's defense ministry also released a video of training exercises in the south of the country. Both sides are blaming each other for provoking Sunday's naval clash in the Kerch Strait. Russian ships fired on and seized three Ukrainian naval vessels, capturing the crew. The Ukrainian sailors have been charged with unlawfully entering Russia and are being held pending trial. Western countries are calling for their release. U.S. President Donald Trump has threatened to cancel a planned meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin at this week's G20 summit. But Russia says the meeting will occur, as it's too important for both sides.
Joel Ludroy with that report. We now turn to Cameroon, where deadly violence between Anglophone separatists and government troops have been raging on for weeks. The conflict is rooted in the country's English-speaking western provinces, where armed insurgents are waging war against the government in the capital, Yaounde.
The unrest has been simmering since 2016, when industrial action and demonstrations were met with brutal government crackdowns. The crisis has intensified since then, as rebel militia sprang up in the country's Anglophone regions. Agbo Nkogbo is a human rights lawyer and activist who was at the forefront of protests when they began.
This has been a 57-year period of marginalization, and the lawyers started it, the teachers joined, but it was a reflection of the bitterness, the frustration, the oppression and the suppressions of the Anglophones by the Francophones. So they just needed a mouthpiece, they just needed a voice that would articulate their problems. When the lawyers started the strike, the teachers joined, another aspect of the civil society joined the lawyers and the teachers.
And how does that, which sounds like a civilized response, how does that degenerate into war?
You just said it right. It was a very civilized response. We just had court boycotts, a few street protests, non-violent, very pacifist. But on the 17th of January 2016, the government arrested Dr. Fontaine, who was the Secretary General of the Cameroon Anglophone Civil Society Consortium, and myself, who was the president, and other activists, other human rights activists, took us to jail, charged us with secession, terrorism, and group rebellion, amongst others, and violently suppressed and attacked the demonstrators. So it changed from a very peaceful strike, and it became very violent.
So where is this now heading? Because Anglophones are now looking for a separate country?
Yes, there's an armed struggle which is ongoing on. Anglophones want the restoration of the statehood of Ambazonia. Some believe that that would be the panacea to the solution.
So what, Ambazonia existed before and was lost, what, during colonial times?
Well, the name used to be Southern Cameroons or West Cameroon. Ambazonia has been a historical name, but if you follow the UN decolonization process, it was either Southern Cameroons or West Cameroon. The name Ambazonia was coined by Gorgui Dinka, who has been like the leader of the Ambazonia struggle before 2016. But what is happening today is that the separatists believe that they need to restore the state of Southern Cameroon or Ambazonia. Others believe that there should be a restoration of the two-state federation that had existed in Cameroon. So these are the conflicting positions of Anglophones in Cameroon.
Agbon Kongo, a Cameroonian human rights activist and lawyer. And of course, to your comments, Manny Ngwa says, thanks, sir, for saying the truth. Everywhere you go, you are saving lives.
And Tigutsemi Shaka, you're saying, we are divided by senseless things, fellow Africans. It's pathetic here.
And Solim Bakosa says, it became a war when people asking for legitimate demands were arrested, internet cut off. When you get pushed to the wall, the only place left for you to go is forward, and you can only do that by fighting.
And Wamontala Ba, you're saying a civil protest turned into a civil war because civilized protesters were met with an uncivilized military crackdown.
He goes on to say, now no one has control over anything. The price of stone-aged leadership. Many thanks for those comments. Keep them flowing as usual to Facebook DW Africa.
Welcome back to this edition of Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latus.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Just a reminder that you can also listen to us through our Facebook page, DW Africa.
And coming up in the next 15 minutes, how life-changing is football to young African women?
Brought some positive things into my life because, you know, football is a profession. And that's what I chose to do. And now I have a club outside the country.
And actually, Assumpta, I should tell you that, you know, I'm a big fan of female football. And one of my favorites is a retired German player, Celia Okoenodambambi. You know, she's born of a Cameroonian father and a French mother. And of course, Maria, the one and only Brazilian, you know, one of the best, actually. she has like a Messi kind of dribbling skills.
I see that you know so many of them, and
exactly.
I do too. But let's go to Kenya. The overloaded court system there is often delivering justice only after plaintiffs have spent long, long periods of time, even years, waiting. The modern justice system was introduced during the colonial era.
And because of the backlog of cases in Kilifi County on the east coast, the largest tribe, the Mijikenda, has maintained its traditional court system where a variety of disputes are resolved quickly and usual to the satisfaction of all parties. Diana Wanyonyi visited one of the traditional court sittings and filed this report.
Kaya Forest consists of 11 separate forest sites spread over some 200 kilometers along the coast. They contain the remains of numerous fortified villages known as Kayas, which are sacred sites of Mijikenda people. Since 2008, the forests have been on the UNESCO list of World Heritage Sites for their unique testimony to a cultural tradition. I'm on my way towards the Rabai Traditional Court near the Kaya Forest in Kilifi County. The court is commonly known here as the Mwembe wa Mwaruga, the Mijikenda term for a traditional court. The proceedings are conducted under a huge tree and everyone present sits on the ground. There are some rules to be followed before you are allowed to sit in this sacred place. Women have to cover themselves with a cotton wrapper known as a leso, and all participants have to leave their shoes 2 meters away from the court area. Aisha Juma is one of the women prosecutors. She welcomes me with a broad smile. She tells me to wrap a leso around my waist and shoulders, and she escorts me to the court. She directs me to sit on a log. Today, the court will hear 3 cases. One has been brought by a man who accuses a woman for making his son crazy. After hearing the details, a judge and several other court leaders decide there is no enough evidence to prosecute the woman. She is very happy with the outcome.
The matter has been resolved by the elders. They have said that we should unite at home. I'm happy.
Aisha Juma says many local people opt to go to this court rather than the modern one because cases are resolved faster.
Many people have embraced this rabbi court because it brings them together. In Mijikenda, it's only here.
Harry Chivuto has been the chief judge for more than 30 years. Clad in traditional red and white regalia, he explains the importance of this court.
We are seated here because of our ancestors. This is Mijikenda Parliament. What we say here is what is delivered in Kaya Forest. When we go there, we pray for greatness. During drought, we pray for rainfall and an abundance of food. We also pray for the removal of bad things.
The elders pass judgment using their wisdom and without bias. They don't deal with cases such as murder, gender-based violence, and capital offenses. They are paid 250 Kenyan shillings, equivalent to $2.50 for each case. Speaking in Mombasa recently, Kenya's Chief Justice David Maraga said Kenya's judicial system has been struggling with the backlog of cases.
A report by Diana Wanyonyi.
U-Zone.
Now, for many years, football has been seen as a game for men or boys and not for women or girls. Do you agree with that?
No.
Okay, whatever. Today, though, many young females are also venturing into the game and even dream to be professional footballers. For some young women on the African continent, however, this has been already a reality and they are now playing in big tournaments such as the African Women's Cup of Nations. This year, Ghana has been hosting this tournament.
And the tournament, which has attracted many people this year, has seen 8 footballing nations competing for the ultimate prize. The continuous staging of this championship shows how female football is developing fast across Africa. Isaac Kalechi Nakura went to watch one of the matches and sent this report.
Hundreds of football lovers cheering their teams on to victory at Ghana's National Sports Stadium in the capital, Accra. It's the semi-final match between women teams of Cameroon and Nigeria. Both teams are participating in this year's African Cup of Nations Women Championship hosted by Ghana.
This lady contacted my dad that there's a club that needs players.
Faustina Ampa is a defender for Ghana's women national team, the Black Queens. The 21-year-old started playing as a young girl. Ampa is lucky because her family, especially her father, is supporting her. She's now earning a living from football and is now able to take care of her father and other relatives. She says playing football has been life-changing.
It has brought some positive things into my life because, you know, football is a profession and that's what I chose to do. And now I have a club outside the country. I'm playing professional, so I think I have a career that I can boost off. I would say that my dream has already started. I'm still in my dreams, but I wish to achieve more and I know I will get there.
Vanessa Nelson is another footballer and also a fan of female football. She has traveled from Nigeria to Ghana just to see her friends playing for the Super Falcons of Nigeria in the ongoing championship. She is aspiring to one day play for her national team. She talks about how the exposure she currently gets from playing football has transformed her life.
Football can really, really change a life. Changing my life so better because I see that I really get the opportunity to travel a lot. And I'm making it. And some people playing football, some ladies, they can actually help the youth out there because there are a lot of girls out there who wanted to get the opportunity to play football, but they are not getting any help. And it's very, very bad.
Nelson's concerns of some girls lacking opportunities to play football is a major issue. There are families still unable to afford football boots and balls for their girls, let alone secure professional contracts for them. Some girls also have to fight stereotypes that come with girls playing the game. The unlucky ones are consumed by social vices and go astray. Playing football seems the only hope for some of them. African female football analyst Betty Yorson says African governments and societies must push more women to play the game due to the emerging impact.
Some time ago, women football was more of like amusement. It was more of like entertainment. But now it is real business. The way we are pushing the men, we are supporting the men football, I think much same concentration should be shifted to the women football because this is what most of girls can do. They want to do something. They want to make an impact in the community or the society they are with the talents that they have. So let's push them. Let's give them the support.
Nigeria's Super Falcons emerged victorious in this match and are through to the finals this weekend. They will be playing the Banyana Banyanas of South Africa. Supporters will be cheering both teams on to victory, but many girls will be watching on television hoping to take up to playing the game and doing their nations proud in the future. It is obvious that female football has come to stay, and in Africa, it could be a refuge for many of the continent's young girls.
Isaac Kaleji there with that report. I'm just wondering, why should women watch this game? I mean, the final on television.
On television. And the main, as we've had in that report, are the fans there. This is what I was telling you, Assumpta. We are the biggest fans of your female football, yeah?
Well,
it's really, really a big shame.
And we do actually have your comments here.
Yeah, but before the comments, in case you're listening to us, all women, please go to the pitch and watch your football. Don't watch it from television. Thank you. Now, the comments. Tiger King says there are women who play football better than some male footballers. FIFA and government bodies have not yet given women their right place.
And when, Innocent Kavisha from Mwanza, Tanzania, you're saying the problem comes when women aren't brought up to do so. Nobody explains the offside rule to them at the age of three, takes them for a kickabout in the park. And I would have liked to be introduced to football, but it's too late. I'm so sorry. Well, actually, I introduced football to my daughter. So
Kongs Assumpta. That's really very nice. And I think your daughter is brilliant on the pitch. I saw her play.
I know.
Yeah. Salam from Cameroon says, my sister will organize the female football competition inter-village and I'll encourage them in my own way.
Okay, and Nuanu Chukwebuka, you're saying it is not a game made for women because it affects their marriage. This is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's your opinion. And you're saying that when a woman footballer gets married, then she will have to choose between football and family. But I think it's just like working somewhere, isn't
exactly.
it?
Anyway, keep that bit flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Speaking out.
In Speaking Out this week, we go to Kampala, Uganda. A magistrate's court there has remanded 9 commercial sex workers for committing a nuisance by easing in the public.
Sympathizers and human rights activists have said the latest arrests and charges are part of the sexual violations that Ugandan sex workers go through. Michael Wambi has more details on that.
According to the law, sex work or prostitution is illegal in Uganda. Once caught, one may face up to 7 years of imprisonment. But because prostitution charges are difficult to prove, the police often use the law to intimidate and exploit sex workers.
Police come and take us. Sometimes they even use us and they don't say it's really hard. Some men don't want to pay, and then also policemen don't want to pay. They want free service.
Pretty Lean is just one among the many sex workers who are forced to render service to policemen for free. Joanna has been a commercial sex worker in a Kampala city suburb for 7 years. The mother of two has lost count of the number of times she has been abused by policemen on night duty.
When the policeman arrests you, he takes you to police because you don't have money. In exchange, he tells you what can you offer for you to go out of jail. So you'll be like, have nothing, I don't have money. The only thing is to have sex with him. So if you have sex with him, he will release you.
Asked about these accusations, no policeman was ready to comment. A sex worker in Uganda can earn up to 1.5 million shillings. That is almost €500 per month. Lady Mermaid's Bureau is an initiative that speaks about violence against sex workers, including violence from police. They also train sex workers to speak up when confronted by violence. Ali Kigongo works for Lady Mermaid's Bureau. He says his organization has several times confronted the police about the matter, but it has been proven hard to pin down the perpetrators.
We have trained them to be very vigilant and have sight out that a police officer with this number did this. Unfortunately, most of them fear to engage the police in court and they have to keep quiet. And then there are clients who are harsh and use force and rape the women.
Because sex work in Uganda is not recognized as legitimate work, sex workers are unable to seek legal redress when their labor rights are violated.
Michael Wambi with that report.
And now we do have some comments here. Olanya Dipo, you're saying legalizing prostitution is the same as legalizing robbery.
And Imran Bojang says, sensitize them to stop prostituting themselves and be resourceful. I think, you know, there's a good mix of comments there.
Yeah.
But just all you can do is continuing the debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And that's all we had for you. On behalf of the rest of the team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Assumpta Latos. Thank you for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.